We are live. Well then,
live. All right.
Welcome to Huntington Arts Council's Conversations in the Arts. I'm Mark Cortade. I'm the Executive Director of Huntington Arts Council, and we're happy to have you with us this evening for Conversations in the Arts, amplifying voices in the arts, voices of a new generation. I am not the new generation, but our moderator and our panelists are. So we're looking forward to hearing from them. My normal housekeeping here, I need to thank the New York State Council on the Arts and the town of Huntington for their support in making a lot of our programming happen, including tonight. This started a couple years ago as an experiment. We would normally do this in better times in person in our gallery. And it was a way to bring people into the gallery who might not normally go in, people from a performing arts world or people who didn't exhibit in our gallery. And it started out that way. And then once the pandemic hit, it took us a couple months to figure out this Facebook Live thing, which turned out to be the biggest like blessing from going from 20 to 25 people to like 1500 people. You know, we're gonna have to figure out how to make this work as we move forward with live and in person and streaming together. So stay tuned on that one. But some other things we do is Tuesday evening, we began a business education for artists workshop 4 weeks in a row in collaboration with Babylon Citizens Council on the Arts, BACA. We're doing it down in Babylon. The first one went extremely well. Marie St. Cyr is leading the workshops and she is got a lot of good business skills to teach people. Our next conversation in the arts in November is going to be very loosely visual artist. Our panelists will be Candido Crespo, an artist and educator, Suhe Gutierrez, an artist, Elena Carianis, an artist, Eve Hammer, she's an artist and director of development at the Long Beach, New York Arts Council. And the moderator is Johanna Matheson, who is the executive director of Artists in Partnership Incorporated. And I want to give a shout out to her. Anytime I talk to anybody who has been in the arts in Long Beach at all, they give credit to Johanna Matheson for, oh, she helped me do this. Oh, she got me to do that. She introduced me to the people on this. She has been a leader in the arts in that area for a long time. And just very proud of the work she's done and happy to have her as our moderator. If you enjoy these conversations, they can be found on our website and on our Facebook page. They're also available as podcasts via Anchor FM or Amazon. And that's more towards the younger generation than to me at this point. So I watch them on Facebook. And last but not least, as always, donations are welcomed and encouraged to help us keep our programming in place. There's a little donate button if you're watching this. Be a hero. Thank you so much for anything you can give to us. And tonight, amplifying voices in the arts, voices of a new generation. Jose Tudevan, founder of Colored Colors and one of my board members, happy to have him around these days, put this together for me. And I'll go back to last week for those that joined us. We did our first conversation in Spanish, and only because, you know, Jose and I had a conversation. We were at lunch and it was, you know, have you thought of doing one of these in Spanish? And like, you know, I've thought of it, but I can't do it. And he said he could, and he did. And it went really well. And I'm happy we did it. We'll debrief and figure out our next step on that. But it was, I think, a good step forward for Huntington Arts Council. And, you know, as we plan in the future, that's something good to have under your belt to say, well, we did that. It went well, we got a lot of hits on it and some new audience coming in to see us, and that's kind of what it's about. But tonight, very happy to have some other new faces joining us. Jose, why don't you do the introductions?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to everyone that's joining us. Thank you, Mark, Huntington Arts Council, as always, for allowing me to, you know, bring these ideas to the tables and not only just bring them to the table, but actually execute them. I think last week, thank you to whoever joined and watched the first ever panel talk in strictly Spanish. I know we messed up a couple of times, but it's all a learning experience for us too. But once again, thank you to everyone, and you know, happy to be here as we close out Hispanic Heritage Month. Tomorrow is the last day, so you know,
You just called it Hispanic Heritage Month.
I did.
Is that technically what it is? I mean, I've heard
there's a lot of different ways. I could have said Latinx, but I'm used to saying Hispanic Heritage.
Okay.
It's Latino Heritage. It's
good enough for me. Thing.
I think that's what it is. You know, that's what the conversation was about last week. And I think we're also going to try to get into it a little bit this week to see what we think of that terminology. All right, let's get to it. So I'm going to introduce our panelists. I'm just going to introduce you guys and then we'll do popcorn. So you pick whoever wants to do their little intro next, but I have, let's start off with Desiree, since you're to the right of me on this call, so.
So my name is Desiree Alvarado. I am 28 years old. I am a registered nurse and a small business owner. I own an online fashion boutique for women. What else do you want to know?
All right, who are you picking next? Go ahead, we're doing popcorn. So you choose, Desiree. Who do you want to?
Oh, I'm like, what's popcorn? I'm gonna choose Evelyn.
I knew it. hi, my name is Evelyn. I am 30 years old and I am a full-time freelancer for makeup as of 4 months ago. But prior to that, I was working at a pediatrician office. So that's my intro. Let's choose Allison.
Well, I'm mostly known as Zuki. Allison is obviously my real name. I am 33. I've been doing this since I was 5 and my company for 11 years now. I travel around. And I'm an artist / graffiti artist / muralist. I do a lot of things too. So yeah, that's it.
Jacob, you're the one left.
Last, right? All right. Well, my name is Jake Valvier. I am a senior at Stony Brook University. I'm currently going to school for journalism. I want to venture into all types of arts. I've always been artistic in a way since a young age. I'm 23 years old. I don't know if I mentioned that. That's pretty much it at the moment. That's all I could say. I got a lot on my plate, but I'm working towards my goals. So.
Well, I didn't say how old I was. I'm 65 years old. So I've never had a panelist start by telling us their ages before.
I don't think we ever discuss her. I mean, I'm 28. Yeah. Matters now. So. That's out the door. All right.
We've got a new trend.
There's a new trend. Now the next panel talk you have to include age.
Ain't gonna happen.
I'm gonna say my horoscope, but I'm like, I don't know if anybody cares about that.
I don't know if we're gonna do I'm a Leo rising.
I'm a Capricorn.
Libras.
Capricorn.
Scorpio.
Gemini, split personalities.
It's actually going to be an astrology panel talk. All right. Okay. So everybody introduce themselves. Let's get the conversation started, guys. As we see, we got a fun group. So I'm glad that we're all got the jitters out. So we're actually here, as we said, the conversation today is really to discuss the new generation coming up next. And as being Hispanic Heritage Month, Latinx Heritage Month, Latino Heritage Month, I decided to, pick the panel that I did today because all of you come from a Latin background, Latinx background. So, viva to us as we celebrate this whole month, even though we're Latino all year round. So we're gonna, touch some topics regarding that aspect of it. And also you guys are what is up next. As you see, we have from 23 to 33, but we still have a long way to go. Congratulations, like Allison said to Mark, finally retiring this year, you finally made it. So we strive to get there one day.
By the time we retire, it'll be like at the age 100. they keep moving that age.
Yeah.
We'll see if we ever retire, actually. But
I'm just going into my next phase of life. I can just start doing some other things now and looking forward to that. And I'm getting ideas from listening to people. So I'm all ears.
All right. So first question that we had, and we'll start off with Jacob. What does Latinx mean to you?
All right. Well, for starters, Latinx signifies everything in my life. My roots, my origin, my making, it's everything to me. I'm proud to be who I am, and I wouldn't change it for anything. Have I always been this way, though, to be proud of my nationality and where I come from? No, I wouldn't be able to say that. In the past, I tended to hide my nationality from people because of the fear of prejudices and that they might have against me being Latino, or just knowing that because of my features, they would play a guessing game about what nationality I was, and they would do from me being half Black, or, you know, I've gotten Asian before. So, you know, when you tend to play a guessing game based off, you know, your roots and your origin, it kind of strips away your, how would I put it? It strips away your identity, you know? It's like I said, I'm proud, and I kind of had to work towards being proud of where I come from. So, you know, when people did that, because I grew up in Queens, and I grew up in a very Spanish neighborhood, and making that transition from Queens to Long Island, it was definitely a big adjustment, just based off the neighborhood and the culture that I was surrounded by. So, yeah, that's what Latinx would mean to me, or being Hispanic in general, you know.
All right, so I'm not going to touch too much because you touched another question that's coming up next. So we'll try to flow through this, and then, you know, we could, you know, if anyone has questions to the other panelists, feel free to. I know I'm moderating, but as I let you guys know, I want this to be as authentic as possible. And I will jump in, and Mark, if you feel like you want to jump into in the conversation, you know, that's an option. All right, Evelyn, what does Latinx mean to you?
To be honest, Latinx to me means like just a term for inclusivity, regardless of your gender, or if you're like heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, asexual. I think it's just a term to like include all types of Latin, Hispanic people together without identifying a gender or who they really are, because we're all, you know, human, and we're all Hispanic. And I feel like, well, most of us like on this panelist, we're all Hispanic. And I feel like instead of doing Latina, Latino, I think it's just a way to just bring us all together in one term.
All right, Desiree.
So Latinx is definitely a word that I had to Google today, because I really did not know the difference between Latino, Latina, Hispanic, Latinx. So I'll be honest, I had to Google it today. And I like that it is like gender neutral. So, and I feel like it's based on like personal preference if you want to identify yourself as a Latinx. But for me personally, I will still identify myself as Latina or Hispanic. But I like that it's not like very broad. Anybody can call them, well, you can call yourself Latinx if you want, but I really feel like it's your personal preference.
And that's interesting, because we actually brought that up last conversation, and some people, you know, like today is interesting, because we don't have anyone past 35. Last week we did. Oh, you're still young in our eyes.
You're 21.
Yeah. And then we have Jacob, who's actually the youngest one in the panels these two times around, being 23. So it was one of those things, and not to get too off topic, because I still need the answer from Zuki. But that was one of the things that people weren't sure of what Latinx actually was, because it is a new terminology. For anyone that didn't know, now you know, because I think Evelyn and Desiree kind of explained what it really stands for, and the transition that we've made from Latino to from Latino and Latina to Latinx is just to make everyone in the community feel included, especially because there's been different hate crimes within the Latin community in the past couple of years regarding, you know, people's sexuality and all that stuff. So I think it was a good change that we had, just to feel everyone included. But now Allison, Zuki, what is your answer to this question?
So to tell you the truth, I didn't think there was a definition for Latinx. I thought it's just the name of the show. Well, the talk of the conversation. So, but hearing this and learning it, it's crazy because what I was gonna say prior, it still stays the same. Like what Jacob said is, it all becomes, I feel like Latinx is your roots, who you were born to be and who you were born and then who you want to succeed. So you're two different people, you know? So it's basically the same thing for me. Like you can become whoever you want to be. And Latinx, I feel like, is who you choose to be. And yeah, so that's what I think it is. So if you're Latin and you want to be whoever you want to be, you have the choice of whatever you started from, say gender, you can be who you want to be. Latinx is open to everything, any choice you want to be, any choice you want to become. And that's how I feel like that's what it means. So that's kind of weird because I didn't know what it meant, but that's what my answer was prior to, so.
Yeah, so Latinx is actually, like we just said, it's a new terminology that's being used just to, I feel like, just to have everyone included within the Latino and Latina community. But with that conversation, I'm going to lead to the second question, which was something too that we can get into with the topic, was what Jacob was kind of saying, and it was the same sentiments that the panelists shared last week. What seems like when, from our culture, people really don't know where we're from. For the most part, you can't really tell from the beginning when you meet somebody from a Latino or Latina background, like really get it on point from where you are. So we're gonna have the question of what is your background and where do you come from? And I guess we're gonna go backwards. So Zuki, let's hear it. Who you represent?
So I represent Peru. Yeah. So I wasn't born there. I was born in Queens, Jamaica. And yeah, that's it. I just don't want to get into any other conversation, any answers to any other questions. But yeah, I'm Peruvian and I was born in America in Queens. Ta-da.
Desiree?
Oh, okay. So just like Allison, I was born in America. My parents are born in America. But my mother's side, my family came from Peru, and then my father's side is from Colombia. But like we were saying before, when they look at me, I get Mexican, I get Salvadorian, I never get Peruvian or Colombian. But I tell people, it's in the eyes. Look at the eyes.
Yeah, I don't even get Spanish, I get Filipino.
I can see it.
Yeah, I think I didn't know you were Colombian, Des, because I actually thought you were Central American as well. See it even between us, like nobody, you know, I'm Ecuadorian. I don't get Ecuadorian. Barely do I get Ecuadorian.
But you know what? I feel like people that are born here in the States don't have that sense to know what you are. Like my husband, he's so good. I'd be like, oh, she's Salvadorian or she's Dominican. Like he can read the way they speak, their tone. He knows who they are. But me, I don't know. Well, so there's certain accents, people that can't.
For sure. We all have different accents from where we come from. So once we speak in Spanish, but, you know. So Evelyn, let's go. Who you repping?
Well, my parents were born and raised in Dominican Republic, specifically San Francisco de Macorís. And then I'm American. Like I feel like I'm more American than anything, but yes, I was born and raised out here, Brentwood, Long Island, New York.
Right, Jacob.
My father on my father's side is Puerto Rican, and on my mother's side is Ecuadorian. My mother was an immigrant, so she came here when she was about like I think 6 years old. And my grandparents made that move for a better life, you know, that whole America is a better opportunity. So they made that move, and then she met my father, and you know, down the line they had me. So yeah, Boricua and Ecuadorian.
I actually didn't know you're Dominican. sometimes. So I'm learning from my panelists here. Yep, I had no idea.
Who's that again?
Evelyn.
Oh, Evelyn, I was like,
I didn't know you were Ecuadorian either. Actually, I see the Puerto Rican for sure, but
yeah, definitely Puerto Rican.
Definitely the Puerto Rican, but the Ecuadorian, you got me there. All right, well, now that we're, I know you guys weren't born in your respective roots, but that doesn't stop us from being Latino or Latina. So the next question is, you know, what makes you proud of having that those roots and being Latino or Latina? Because at the end of the day, I know we're, you know, I wasn't, but all you guys were born here in the United States. But I think everybody still reps their country everywhere they go, especially because of the last names. I think that's really what makes us stand out and know that we are from that, from a different culture. So we'll start out with Evelyn. Let me hear it.
What makes me proud to be a Latina? I mean, the food, the music, the beauty, the fact that people travel to our countries in order to feel like relaxed and have a vacation. And I mean, what else can I say? The spice. Like, I feel like wherever we go, we bring a little spice and like just that openness to be yourself and sing, be loud, dance, enjoy our food. Like, I just feel like all of that and more, but I mean, I'm proud.
All right, we're going to let's go to Jacob.
The reason I'm proud is because of our culture and everything about it and everything that it holds. Even like the feeling that you get when you're with your family, I feel like, I mean, I can't really compare my family compared to other families that, you know, Italian family or Irish family, but from my experience being in a, you know, a household full of Spanish people, and even like my the broader family, it's super tight, like tight in meaning like we're all super close, and we're not afraid to be open about things and speak our mind. I do love the food. The food is the best part. You know, we know how to use our spices and the music. I love Spanish music. I'm someone who loves like all types of music, but Spanish music does something to me. You know, makes my hips move, and I don't know if I would be able to say that I can dance, but I don't know. Something takes over when Spanish music comes on, so I can definitely say I'm proud of about everything that I said.
Allison?
I would have to say basically everything that everybody said, the music, the food. Every time I hear anything like, oh, are you Latina? The word for me is very colorful. As an artist, I see the word Latin, our countries, any place that we go in like Central America and all that stuff, it's like, I feel like it's very colorful and nutritious and stuff like that. So I feel like we're just a very colorful society. And that's it. I'm very proud of that.
If I could just jump in here, this makes me very happy because, I mean, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, in basically a Sicilian family. Grandma was from Sicily, but it's the food. And anybody that knows me, you know, if you look at my Facebook page, 40% of what I do is this is what I made. You know, we had a 3-day weekend. I made pots and pots of sauce. I made homemade pasta. You know, that's what I do. And that's just such an important, I think, unifier for families. You know, it's the dinner table. And I, you know, I remember growing up and being at grandma's house every Sunday for sauce, and, you know, 16 people with 16 conversations going on at the same time, but everybody knew what everybody else was talking about. And that's, that was just a cultural thing. And, you know, like being the head of an arts council, I think it isn't an accident. I think this is a universal unifier that, you know, those roots, it comes, your culture goes with you. Your culture goes with you and becomes a part of who you are. And it may homogenize with generation to generation, but it's what makes, I think, you're using the word spice, I'll use it differently. It's what makes, you know, living it puts some spice in living, that we're not all the same. It would be very dull if everybody were like me. Just trust me on that one. It would be very dull. But that, you know, we get a lot of different personality in here. And I don't mean individual personality, but there's a lot of personality coming out of your stories. And I think that's kind of what, you know, the arts and cultural community is all about. You know, these are the things that draw us together. I meant to mention this before. This is from one of our great Long Island artists, Diego Garcia. And I picked this up in June when he had it at Muñeca. And I loved it. I love the colors. It's just, it's bright. It's very cheery. It's a little outside of his normal wheelhouse. And I didn't realize it was Michael Jackson when I bought it. But it just makes me very happy to look at this. And what do Diego and I have in common? Absolutely nothing except our art sort of.
Art, yeah, for sure.
And I think something in common, yeah. And you know, and you talk about dancing and you know, exactly. That's what it's, yeah. That's why we're doing this.
So Desiree, what is that?
So
we're going with the food too?
I'm just gonna have to agree with everybody. You guys all had good answers, man. You guys took all my answers. But number one is the food, but I also love the love that we give off. That like when I go see my family, I give everybody a hug and a kiss. Like I literally just saw you 5 minutes ago, but I'm still giving you a hug and a kiss. I don't know if that's just my family, but, or that's a whole like Latino that do that, Latino families. But the love that we give, the fiery passion that we have as Latinos and Latinas, I love that. I just love our culture in general. I love that just every country has their own, like different culture, different kinds of food, but then we're all kind of the same. They're all kind of the same, but all different. They're all different, but the same. I don't know how to explain it, but I love being a Latina. You guys have all the answers.
You know what? It was good that you switched it up. I don't know if you had that pre-written or it was on the fly, but I knew that was interesting that you said, yeah, it's the hugs and the kisses every family party. You better every single one better get one, because if not, you're gonna get
you gotta go right back there in front of everybody and give that tia a kiss before you go, or they're gonna be talking about it the next day.
That's for sure. All right, so we're going to switch it up a little bit. And I guess we're going to get into a little bit more serious questions, or more, not really politically inclined, but I guess more of a, nope, no politics here. But let's hear why these questions came up to my head was because there's certain things that me personally, it's also, I'm curious to know answers from my peers in the Latinx community. So that's really where a lot of these questions came from. So, you know, myself being just like you guys from the same culture, there was a lot of things that coming up, there was difficulties just because you were Latino or Latina. So, you know, the next question is that, and I wanna hear, you know, what we have to say and see where we can have the same sentiments maybe. Or the different stories that we have of what difficulties did you face from being a Latino or Latina. So we could start off, we're going to go with Allison since she brought the showstopper now.
Say the question again, I'm so sorry.
What difficulties did you have you had, if any, because of you being a Latino or Latina?
I would have to say I never had any complications or anything like that with my race. I did move at 12 years old from Queens to Long Island. So it was a drastic move and change for me, because over there is like, you know, I took the bus and subways and walked to school, long distance walking. And I had every type of like culture around me, from all different, also religion, and it was just crazy. I had, you know, a lot of Guyanese, I had Jewish people around me, I had, you know, Spanish, I had African American, I had white, so I had everything. I had a little, and I went to a school, you know, like that. So coming to Long Island, in West Islip. I went to high school, so it's completely different. And they considered it at the time White Islip because there wasn't any colored people there. So me moving into this high school, I thought I was going to have a hard time. But actually, I was welcome with open arms, which was really cool. All the girls were like, oh my God, you're glowing. I love your brown skin. And I'm like, okay, thank you. So I was really fortunate to have that at that school. I made a lot of friends. I never was judged.
And I guess I'll ask you a side question. Is that also where, like, because the Zookies, I don't know if you want to talk about it a little bit of, because I think it's important of what your character is and what it represents. Does that have anything to do with it by any chance?
No, my Zookies are more of a connection between each other, anybody. It can be anybody. So my characters are non-gender. They're nobody. They're just it. And they communicate through thought bubbles and facial expressions. So there is no secrets in this world that they live in. So if anything you're thinking about, it will generate a little thought bubble and will just pop up. And then the other Zuki will be like, oh my God, that's what you're thinking kind of thing. But they don't speak. That's how they generate that emotion. And my work is basically trying to unite each other together. For instance, like technology, I feel like technology now, it benefits us in certain ways, but it's also disconnects us with the world. I used to, back in the day when I was in elementary school, I used to have a pen pal. I don't know if anybody else had a pen pal here when they were younger. But we used to have a pen pal from somebody out of the country, and we used to write these letters, and it was in elementary school, and we would write and we would send it out and then we would receive. So having that communication with somebody, having a letter, I feel like has a better connection instead of like a text message, or maybe even a phone call, better than having a text message. So my Zookies are trying to basically get that one-to-one connection with each other, with the world, get back with the world, with one of each other. So that's basically what my work is. So it doesn't really influence my Latina heritage or anything like that. It mostly with my work is also like street art. It's back to my where I was born and stuff like that. So in the city and bringing all the pop culture back to me.
All right. Yeah, I didn't want to sidetrack too much, but I was curious to know if that if that played anything. No. But all right, Desiree, as you being a woman entrepreneur, as well as Evelyn, but we'll get to you next. Mm-hmm. I want to know if, you have faced any difficulties during your time, you know, bringing up your brand and creating your boutique and whatnot.
So I actually had a different answer. Had nothing to do with entrepreneurship, but one thing that I found difficult is people assuming that I speak fluent in Spanish. I don't know about you, but that's a difficulty for me because everybody comes out, I'm like, can you slow down? Because I didn't get one word you said. So like, I do speak Spanish, but it's not the best. But for me, that's what I find difficult. And I hate when people shame me for not speaking perfect Spanish. So my parents spoke to me in English. The only Spanish that I got was from my grandparents. But then my parents would be like, well, you should speak more Spanish. Well, you should have spoke to me in Spanish when I was growing up. So I blame you guys. But but in the job that I'm at now, you know, as a nurse, I feel bad because, you know, in our hospital, there's a big community of, you know, Hispanics that are our patients. And sometimes I'm the only person who's able to speak Spanish. And I'm the best that they got because, you know, I try my best to speak to them, you know, so they can get comfortable and, you know, they're scared. Nobody else speaks Spanish. Everybody else just speaks English. And I'm the only person that they probably spoke to their whole time there in the hospital. But that's what I find difficult is people just assuming that we all speak Spanish. Like I know from experience, I know a lot of Puerto Ricans don't speak Spanish, and and I feel like people are like, no, you're Latina, you should speak Spanish. Some people just wasn't raised and they weren't spoken to in Spanish growing up. So that's my answer.
All right, that works. Evelyn, would you like to chime in?
So as a makeup artist, I feel like the difficult T's eye face is just them assuming I can't skin match, like whether they're, you know, African-American or white. I feel like the assumption now, okay, like they only, like she can only do yellow girls because she's a yellow, like, you know, she's a Latina. So I feel like the assumption that you can't color match, I guess, when applying makeup, or that you only do a certain type of makeup, or like, I feel like just limiting what I know based on just seeing me in a sense. But and I really don't face a lot of difficulties as far as like the language part, but definitely the way I apply makeup and then pre-assuming that I wouldn't be able to do their face correctly because of their skin complexion or where I'm from.
How have you tackled that? Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, once again, this panel is like kind of like everybody's from different industries here. So like I said, Jacob's from journalism. Desiree is coming from a nurse background, but at the same time, she runs her body boutique. And then you have Evelyn, who's a makeup artist, and we have Zuki, who's an artist, YouTuber, creative overall. But yeah, in your industry, that's interesting. I would have never thought that was, you know, a thing, because makeup is pretty much worldwide. It's something that,
yeah,
that everybody does. I think most cultures, at least, are allowed to wear makeup. And obviously, we know how big these industries are and like how much money they profit. Once again, not to get off topic, but I'm curious now of like, how have you tackled that issue? Have you built a clientele that's not just Hispanic?
Yes, but that's through experience. I mean, if you have that one person that trusts you and wants to sit on your chair and just be like, go ahead, like, you know, without limiting you, through experience, you get better. And then obviously educating yourself and just not limiting yourself into just being like, okay, then I'm only gonna do yellow skin tone girls, white girls, or brown girls. Like, you need to just like full on just tackle the experience, say yes to everybody, regardless of what complexion they are, and you keep on building and learning from there. But another thing I can add, though, I think another difficulty in the makeup community is not a lot of Latin women having these high-end brands or making a high-end brand out of their like their creativity, because you just see, I don't know, that American population.
That's very interesting. I actually didn't notice that. Yeah, we don't have any representation in the makeup industry like that.
Right. Well, no, now yeah. Jennifer Lopez is with her J-Lo, makeup line. Well, now, you know, she had to come. She had to come away.
Somebody had to get the bag. Somebody had to jump in.
But there is some out there that I've seen, not famous, but I mean, like J-Lo, she has who else has? But she has skincare. I forgot her name. I forgot her name. I stink with names. But she also has, somebody else has also skincare. Like, they're going out there. I feel like a lot of the
like, it's interesting. It's not a makeup. Yeah. Obviously, this is not a makeup panel, but or a TV industry. But it's interesting to say that. Once again, I'm very curious, because if anybody knows, Latinos and Latinas, we literally go from the whole spectrum of color. There is, you know, every single country, at least Ecuador, you will have every color available
in the yeah. skin
tone. So, you know, and I think that also falls for even Colombia as well, Peru, you know, like all of us have, there's all over. Dominican Republic definitely has, you know, different types of skin tones. So that's interesting that that's something that you face, because yeah, if you actually knew Latino, we are all over the spectrum.
Right.
But so Jacob, I don't know. I know he let us know that his Wi-Fi is a little spotty, but I don't know if you want to chime in on any difficulties. I know that you touched upon the question at the beginning a little bit. So if you want to go ahead and add anything. I don't know if we lost him.
It's the what is it? Airbnb's fault.
He was tuning in all the way from Salem. All right, so I think we're losing Jacob. Jacob, are you back?
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Did you fix the antenna?
I did. I tried.
Did you put aluminum foil on that?
Hopefully I don't cut back out, but this is a pretty deep question. So I'm going to try to cover a few things. Well, first and foremost, I think that there is a issue with being open about your emotions with specifically for, I feel, Latin families. I felt that growing up that I wasn't really able to talk about my anxieties and my depression that I, you know, kind of suppressed throughout my high school and middle school year. And I felt like I was really like hard for me to really open up to my my parents about it, especially because my I feel like a lot of, I mean, this could be a stereotypical, but I feel like a lot of Hispanics are very religious and they are have a, their faith in Jesus and God. And, you know, I kind of was raised that way, but I kind of steered away from that. So I feel like in a way, at least for my family, they expected me to kind of devote my faith into like Christianity, and hopefully that would solve all my issues and my problems. But I felt that, you know, when I did try to do that, I was still suffering with depression and anxiety. So I had to find different ways to cope with that. But honestly, I finally got the guts to tell my parents about it, because I never really opened up about it. I was too scared. And I think that was about that, that fear came from all like the assumptions that I had of other Latin families and how they portrayed, you know, how they raise their kids and stuff like that. This is all from things I've heard from different like peers and stuff. But me myself, I was kind of fearful of actually opening up about all that stuff. And when I did, which was, I believe, over the summertime, I got a good reaction. I got a really great reaction that I really wasn't expecting. They were, you know, in open arms, and they understood that, you know, people, especially our newer generation, I feel like it's definitely harder for us to open up about this type of stuff. So I did get a great reaction from my parents, and I'm kind of like happy that I got that reaction from them. And that I wasn't fearful from just like believing, hey, Latin families are, they don't care about if you're depressed or not that they don't care, but that there's like this stigma, I guess you could say, with having these sort of disorders or anxieties. So I think that's something that we as a community should definitely work towards being more open about, and allowing ourselves to be more open with our emotions and stuff like that. So yeah, if anyone wants to chime in on that, or if they agree or if they disagree with that, I would love to know.
No, I think I'm gonna jump in, because actually last week,
did I cut out again?
We can hear you, you're just lagging. But yeah, you're good on the audio, you're just lagging on video.
Okay.
Yeah, last week we actually had Patricia, who was one of our panelists, and she's actually a therapist. And, you know, like one of my things that I said to her, I thanked her, because I agree. I think that mental health is something that we don't really take seriously that much in the Latinx community. I could be wrong, but from personal experience, especially I feel for you, and us being like 5 years apart, it's interesting that, you know, you still had that same feeling, because yeah, same thing with me. I also suffer from depression. So it's something that was difficult for my mom to understand, when it would just be like days for me that I really just couldn't get out of bed. And I think it, you know, it comes with that, yeah, that stigma of like, we don't really, we don't know what that is. I don't think it's that we don't believe in it. We're just not knowledgeable, and we don't have any, like, you know, we weren't taught that in like, in our roots. So like people suffering from this. And I think like, you were just called crazy at that point. That's really what, you know, that's unfortunately what a lot of people, you know, you'd just be like, oh, está loco, está loca. And yeah, I don't know if anybody else wants to jump in, because yeah, I think that's a very important thing, that, you know, a stigma that is here in our Latinx community. But I feel like
you know, people who do suffer from that, they don't have like therapists who look like them that they can talk to. Because I feel like if somebody, say like I had depression and I wanted to speak to a therapist, I wouldn't want to speak to somebody who, you know, might sound bad. I wouldn't want to speak to a white person because I feel like they wouldn't understand me. I would want to speak to somebody who is a Latina or Latino because they will understand where I'm coming from. So I feel like we don't have a lot of those, but I'm happy that you said that, you know, there was somebody last week who was a therapist.
Yeah. And I, like I said, there's a couple, my good friend Carla Ricalde, she just got certified. And, you know, I think it's growing. Like I think the Latinos in that field will make a difference because, yeah, like you said, it's about feeling, it's the inclusivity part. And that's what like Mark talks about a lot, which is great because he says like, you know, like all this programming, we should have people like us leading it because that way other Latinos or Latinas will be comfortable enough to join the conversation and not feel like it's just forced. Like they can resonate with us. You know, and not to say that they wouldn't with someone like Mark leading the conversation, but it's just like being a little bit more comfortable with things, you know? So, and if anyone else wants to chime in on the mental health stigma that the Latin community has before we continue the conversation, but Evelyn or Allison or Mark.
I'm gonna say something kind of related, kind of off topic, make the fit on this, if you can see where my brain is going with this. But, you know, during like the peak of the pandemic when we were in shutdown, at one point, you know, when we have a gallery and you can see it from the outside, people couldn't go into it, but we asked people to just like make some art that expresses what you're going through right now. And just some gorgeous things came out of that. You know, it was just a way for people to get out of themselves and what they were going through and to put it on a canvas or another way. And, you know, another one of those values of the arts that there's a real need for these sorts of things. And just the sheer beauty of, you know, when you're putting this stuff up and somebody's walking by, like, could I just come in and look at it? And you could just see the need they had to connect to that piece of art. It was visceral. When you were talking about writing a letter to pen pals, it's like, I totally get that because you can touch that. You know, you're this is a part of somebody and their handwriting is in your hands. And it was a big deal when something came from overseas. That's one of those technology things that, you know, technology is great except for when it isn't. But, you know, that visceral feeling that you don't get by picking up the phone or, you know, texting or something. And I think that that's one of the art things. And, you know, be it writing or painting or acting or dancing, there is a real emotional connection between people that way. And it's, you know, the leveler. One of the other things that I do, you know, when I'm not in my art world, I love the tennis world. You know, I love watching tennis, but this conversation is huge in tennis right now. Naomi Osaka talking about things that tennis players never talked about before. And, you know, don't feel like that. Go out and win, go out and make millions of dollars. You know, it's like, no, I can't do that right now. And I think these are important conversations that are happening all across the board. And, you know, the more people talk about it, the more normal it becomes. Oh, I'm not the only one that's ever had that feeling. You know, nobody is that unique. And I think that that is a learning process. So I'm glad you're talking about things and keep talking about them.
Yeah, I think it's not only even in the, you know, the African-American community, I think that's honestly another big step towards them that they're starting to talk about mental health as well. Funny that you said that, like Simone Biles, the gymnast, is another one that just also spoke out recently. Mm-hmm. So I think it's becoming, like you said, a different culture is kind of like bringing that topic to the stage and just highlighting it and making sure that everybody understands, like, yeah, everybody feels, and like, you're not the only one. But like I said, before we move on, Evelyn or Allison, if you guys, anything that you want to chime in on that topic or no?
Mm-mm.
moving on from that. All right. Next one that we got is, since we're talking about things that we would change, I wanted to ask you guys, like, is there anything that you would change in the Latinx community? What would it be? And it doesn't have to be literal. Once again, it could be different. Like we said, I think I'm going to start with Jacob, let you guys think. But I think I'll go with Jacob to start off with this one.
I forgot who said it. I think it was Desiree, but going back to what she said with the assumption that we already, since we're Hispanic, that we know how to fluently speak Spanish. I get that a lot. I currently work at Cheesecake Factory as a server, and a lot of the cooks are mostly Spanish. And I feel like, I took Spanish in middle school and high school, and I was raised by my grandparents pretty much to, you know, learn Spanish, but I never really developed it to the point where I was like fluently speaking. I could understand it. And I feel like when you tell especially at Cheesecake Factory, that you don't know how to speak Spanish, they kind of look at you differently. Like you're not like that type of Spanish, you know, you're like, I don't know, like you're the white Spanish now, or I don't know. That's kind of like what I get the gist from not just to Cheesecake workers, but like I said, any most Spanish people. And even like, you know, my peers, my friends who are not Spanish, they'll be like, oh, you don't know Spanish? And I'm like, oh, do you know Irish or do you know Italian? Like, all because I'm Hispanic doesn't mean I should, that's going to be my native tongue or, you know, stuff like that. So I do feel like that's something that we should start changing. I mean, I do encourage people to.
Ooh. Oh, we lost them right on.
Oh, you got us right into that. You will encourage people to do what? You cut out there.
I will encourage people to learn a new language or their native tongue. Like, I should be speaking Spanish, but I should want and have the desire to want to learn Spanish and to be able to fluently speak it. But I shouldn't be judged if I don't know it, you know? And that's kind of the sense that I feel from the Latin community, that I kind of feel like an outcast if I don't know how to speak Spanish. And, you know, I should be accepted. I should be welcomed with open arms if I don't know. I mean, even if I know a little bit, I think I get little looked at differently or like mistreated in that way. So.
So not in the art business or anything like that, but like Desiree said, like we work at the same place. I work in the ER as well. I work for registration, so you're the first person that I see, get your insurance, ask you all the basic questions. But anyway, in our hospital, there is a big community of Hispanics that go there, and I am always the target of, oh, can you translate for me? Unfortunately, I can't translate because I don't know any medical terms and that, and I would have to say I'm not fluent, but I can speak it in my way and I understand it. But there was this one time where I had this patient, a woman and her boyfriend, and the woman's the one that was being seen, and I asked her, I just went, like, it's natural for me to be like, oh, okay, I'm Allison, I'm gonna be doing your registration in English, you know, and the girl was perfectly fine answering me these questions, right? And then I was literally about to finish, and her boyfriend was like, you don't know how to speak Spanish? And I was like, I just give an attitude, I was, excuse me? And then he's like, you don't know how to speak Spanish? I was like, I do. He's like, so can you talk to her in Spanish? And I was like, sir, she's doing perfectly fine in English. If she needed Spanish, she would have said something. Great. Like it irritated me because it's like, okay, I do know Spanish, but I think it should be their job to tell me, hey, can you speak Spanish for me? Because I feel more comfortable. Or do you know Spanish? Like, don't tell me I'm supposed to know it. Or, you know, it's just like, how about you learn English? Like, you speak perfect English. Like, you know, it's just the term of being respectful to, you know, I know, because I have, like, my mom came from Peru at a young age with my dad. My dad brought her here, and she went to school, she went to college, you know, as an immigrant, and she did all that. So it's not like no, like you can't do it. You can, you just have to strive. And I know a lot of people that come from this country, come here to work to support their families, but there are also a lot of ways to also educate yourself. And I know, I feel like the old generation was very scared too. And I understand that maybe at the time it's like, all right, you're an immigrant, you're an immigrant, you know, nowadays it's like not of the topic of, oh, you're an immigrant and you're shunned for it. No, because it's now everything is different. But I understand, but it's like, you know, it's the way you approach somebody. Don't think you know Spanish or anything, or just ask politely.
But how about the people that like get offended when you are speaking to them right away in Spanish and they're like,
I speak English.
I think we're getting yeah, a good point right here. I think we all gone through this. I'm even like, I'm going to be hypocritical if I say I haven't done that, where I start speaking to someone in Spanish just because I think they're better off, we're better off in the conversation that way. But then I have gotten people that just still like, stick to English right away when I know you speak Spanish. But like I said, I don't want to be hypocritical, but yeah, that's something that I mean, let's not, you can go ahead, Evelyn, if you want to talk more.
I mean, no, I honestly, I feel like the question is, within our community, I feel like we do have these small businesses that have Hispanic speakers, speaks like, you know, it's like us as a community, as Hispanics, we'd rather go more with that high-end corporate, well-known American business versus using our community small business owners to get the help that we need, the translation, the trust that we're going to do right by you, even though I am a small business owner. I think that's been a little bit of a way that we can do better as a community. Like, I don't know if that makes sense.
Nope. Okay. So what you're saying is kind of like, what I think I want to say on that is like, yeah, I think we always strive to go for high end stuff and super like basic, you know, whatever's out there, where like we don't reach for opportunities within our own communities. And I'm going to plug in Huntington Arts Council because that is what I do everywhere I go. But, you know, like the grants that they offer, they actually they want to help more of minority groups. And yet, a lot of you guys probably here don't even know that there's grant opportunities for each one of you to create just something, and literally free money from the state just to by putting something together.
This free money takes 50% of my time right now. No, that's all good. File this away because we're just getting through one cycle, but it will happen again. For 2023, there are grants and. Not necessarily minorities, but underserved populations.
Underserved populations.
The best way to say that, and you can make a case however you need to make a case. And that, yeah, we're here to make the arts broader, make the arts more inclusive, make the arts richer. And that, you know, it goes back to that culture thing we were talking about at the beginning. It just makes for a better place to live. Yeah.
Of course, but what Evelyn was saying, we tend to not look for help within our communities. We just fend for ourselves. But so I guess Desiree is the only one left, right?
Yep. So the one thing that I would change about the Latin community is actually in the home. I never really understood why men had to work and then the women would have to stay home, cook, clean, take care of the family. For me personally, I feel like things are changing. It shouldn't be like that. I shouldn't be at home cooking and cleaning. If I want to work, if I want to make money, I can make money myself. I feel like the older generation's like, no, the man has to pay for everything. Don't pay for anything. No, the man should do this. No, I don't want a man to be like, you have this because of me. I am not that type of woman. I want to make my own money. He makes his own money. You know, that's the kind of person I am. But I think that would be something I would change, is the old thinking of like, no, the woman stays home, cooks and cleans while the man makes the money. That's something I would change.
I'm cool. I've said I'm cool with being a stay-home dad. Like, nobody wants to sign up and do that for me, I'm more than happy to, because I steer away from that machismo culture, which is really what it is in us. It's the machismo in a... You know, it's just like the male figure is always the provider, the male figure is the one that has to do all this, and the the female figure is not allowed to do any of that. But I think, like you said, I think we're changing the ways from that, especially.
No, I think it is changing, definitely. I had to go through it too with my current husband when he was my boyfriend at the time. You know, my mom met his mom, and my mom is like, oh yeah, you know, he's working hard, he's gonna be working, and you know, your daughter is gonna be cooking. And my mom was like, what? Like, her neck cracked. Like, she's like, okay. and she explained to you know this generation, because my mom, she evolved with the generation, and my mother-in-law is learning, but she still stayed, like, she doesn't drive and stuff like that. You know, she's conservative in her home, and my mom is out there, you know, doing stuff. So there's like two different people right there, you know. But they want the same thing. They want a healthy family, a healthy relationship, you know. So it was kind of funny because my mom is like, did you believe what she told me? Que vas a cocinar y limpiar? And I was, and that means, you know, cook and clean. And I was like, yeah, mom, it's okay, you know, she knows, you know, she's kidding, you know. and my husband's like, yeah, okay, you cook. So it was kind of like a thing, because it's like, you know, in my, like, I was born in the 80s, you know, so it was still happening there, you know. And I feel like it's changing, but very slowly, because I still see my sister-in-law, you know, she is working, you know, and but she's also, you know, they're both providing, but it's like, okay, I'm gonna make my husband his meal or whatever, you know. I do here and there, but we're both busy, so there's like really, like, we're just on a go all the time, so there's no time where like he's chillaxing there. And I'm like, you know, I obviously, you want to do your wifely duties, you know, you make him coffee, things like that. Is just something from the heart. It's not, you shouldn't label it as a, oh, you're a woman, get up and get him his coffee.
Surprised I'm not hearing preach, sister, from either of you guys over here.
I see the nods. I'm like,
no, word, what's going on? Yeah, I mean, thank God currently that's not a problem, but I definitely felt that, like, before, when I first was living with my fiance, like, I just would be like, I have to, like, make him his breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, you know, everything has to be, like, prepped and ready and da-da-da. But, like, now it's like, no, you're going to do the laundry, I'm going to cook. Like, you know, a balance.
It's all equality, and that's what I'm about.
Right.
Like, you know, one day you can do this. You're in charge of that. You're in charge of that. And then we live happy life.
Right.
The only rule is happy life, happy wife, or happy wife, happy life.
All right. So the next question, we got that out the way. Now, do you think there's adequate support for us Latinos and Latinas out there? And kind of we're touching upon everything. And I like what we're having here in the conversation, because that shows what our culture is really about. It's like, we literally can just go from one thing to a whole different thing. And that's, you know, that's the spice part of it. But if we're talking about, do you think there's adequate support out there or enough opportunities for us? Or if there is, but do we not just know about it? I guess there's multiple ways to go about this, but whoever wants to start this one can go ahead.
Oh,
all right. Now everybody wants to jump.
Okay, so I feel like there is a lot of information out there. It's just a lot of times people aren't familiar with technology, and they're not able to search those kind of things, because I feel like there is a lot, you know, out there. There's free classes to learn English. I feel like all those stuff that I see there, I see in Suffolk Community College, that they do help out and things like that, for the Hispanic community. And it's just the ability with the technology. I feel like technology is getting so, like, everything is just technology, you know. FaceTime now, you don't get a phone call, you know, you tell Siri to write a text message for you. Everything is just so technical that a lot of times, like, the older generation isn't really catching up to it really quick, how it's growing really quickly. So I feel, that's how I feel like. I feel like there is a lot of information out there that can help the Latin community, and is there. It's just really hard to find.
So I'm gonna add on to that. So I feel like it is hard to find, like, stuff like for me, I feel like when I tried to do my research on how to start a business, there really wasn't a lot of like Latinos or Latinas that had a small boutique. So I had to learn everything through YouTube. But I feel like, you know, year 2020 was, you know, horrible, you know, pandemic and death. But I feel like that was a year of entrepreneurship. And I feel like it brought out the entrepreneurship in everybody. Like everybody had a small business, which I feel is great. And I feel like, you know, we all came together, supported each other. You know, I did a collaboration with Evelyn, Felipe, Jazzy. We did a whole photo shoot together. It came out beautifully. You know, we each got everything, you know, everybody got something out of it. And it was a collaboration. Most of us came from Brentwood. We were all Hispanic, but we all supported each other. And, you know, we each got a little piece of it. But I feel like nowadays, everybody's been really supportive of each other, all, you know, small business owners. But I feel like it's still hard to find help as far as like grants, but you know, now I'm just finding out that you know about the grants now. I wish I would have known that before, but you know, but I feel like there is support out there, where like within the, you know, the Hispanic community.
I agree. And I, like what Allison was saying, I think it's very much just the fact that it's tech-based that it makes it difficult for the older generations to actually like be able to find. But, and I also think also the older generation getting out of their head, and like Jose mentioned, like fending for themselves, trying to make ends meet, them getting out of their head and looking and trying to search and find that help because it is out there is another thing that I feel like our community could do better with. And when there's problems, I feel like our community can come together better in voicing those problems so that something could be fixed and changed.
Mm-hmm. Jacob.
Mm-hmm. So can you just repeat the question? Just so I have like a base of what the idea is.
Sorry, I was muted. Adequate support. Is there adequate support within our communities?
I feel like I'm not really the one. I really don't know because I haven't really reached out to see if there is support. And I mean,
let's say like you're in Stony Brook right now, and you know, when everybody went to college, there was special grants for some special grants for Latinos and Latinas. Like they are different opportunities. So that's what I was asking. I guess for you, that would be really what we would touch upon. It's like your academic career. Do you think there's adequate support just because sometimes there is more help for Latinos and Latinas. I do feel like it is out there. We just don't look for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I am that case then, being the person that doesn't look for it. Like I said, I'm not too fond of like what Stony Brook actually offers as a school for like Latinos as myself. But it's something I do have to like look into because I'm sure there is a lot of stuff that that is offered. But going into like, I don't know if this kind of weighs into the question, but like, I guess the support of even just like, I guess you're not just talking about money, right? Or like grants, like the support meaning like
just support in general. Yeah,
you can also touch on that. I guess in a way, and I did an article that was for Stony Brook based on representation in school itself, like the middle school and high school. I have a statistic here. You guys could fact check it down the line, but. I did this a while ago, but the statistic says about 30% of Long Island students attend a school without a Latinx teacher. That study, I believe, was done in 2017 by Hofstra. You could look that up yourself, but or just look up that whole thing about 30%.
No.
The representation is a huge thing that we should see a lot more. In Am I getting cut off? Or am I
a little bit?
You're good. Am I lagging?
You're good now.
I think representation is a huge important thing in our community. And I think being able to have someone that looks like you in our education system is huge to see and find. So that way you could kind of relate to them. So I guess in that sense, we do lack that, especially in Long Island, with the whole representation sense of it.
So I guess that's kind of like a general, I actually never thought about that. I don't know. I feel like, I mean, I went to Walt Whitman. There was plenty of, you know, Latino teachers. And then I also graduated from Brentwood, plenty of Latina teachers in Brentwood. But, you know, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that statistic being that low. 30% is actually pretty low for, you know.
It definitely might have changed. I was a study done a while ago, but I know that from talking to a few teachers, they have been pushing to get a more diverse drawing of different teachers from different backgrounds, because the whole premise of the article was based upon, it wasn't centered around Latina. That was just a statistic that I wanted to throw in, but it was based off Black teachers, and that is even more severe than Latin teachers. Like, there's absolutely like rarely any Black teachers in Long Island schools. But I know like the topic for the whole thing is not about African culture and Black people, but I just wanted to give you back to the article. That's why I looked it up. And there is culturally, there does seem to be an issue with that, like having diversity in schools.
Well, like we said, it's also like in our culture, they are dark-skinned Ecuadorians, yeah. Or dark-skinned, you know, so it still matters because there's still representation within that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's interesting to think. Yeah, I wouldn't have put those two numbers together. So I guess getting into more of an art, a little bit more of an art talk, because we are here in conversation in the arts. Even though we're not all artists here, I think everybody still has an art of their own, even when it comes to clothes designing, makeup for sure. Zuki with her graffiti and her artwork, and Jacob with your writing. Do you find it more difficult to pursue that creative career coming from a Latino and Latina community? And I think this is a very important question, because I know this is going to be great answers from everyone. Because for me, especially trying to do this colors thing, my mom just started getting it maybe a year ago. But before that, it was something that it was just a fight in this household. And that's what I put in the question, was I really want to touch on like the household and the family, because that's something that as Latinos, are like, we're very close knit with that, or most of us are. So what was your experience pursuing that creative career, and how was it perceived? Whoever wants to jump in.
I guess I'll go. All right. So I have to say I was pretty blessed with my family. I started, I'd say, at 5 years old, and my mom put me into these extra curriculums, anything that would help her out, like help me out and develop my my techniques and things like that. So I started at five, but I wanted to be a lot of things. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a veterinarian. I wanted to be a zoologist. So I loved animals also. So my mother was like, okay, let's just be realistic and be like, okay, just go for the artwork, because that's what we're here for right now. Then when you get into high school, maybe you can look into doing things extra, you know? But anyway, yeah. So as for me, like getting jobs, I wasn't really, I never had a problem with being Latina. My household never gave me a problem either. I feel like the most problem was my gender, which is female. In the street art world, a lot of times being a woman is something that it's like, okay, you shouldn't be doing, you know, street artists. You shouldn't be a street artist. So I feel like that category for me was a hard time because I was a woman. As for my gender, I didn't have a problem at all.
Whoever wants to go next.
I'll jump in. So, you know, when I started my business, it was in 2019, Fatty Boutique Enterprises. Anyways, so So I feel like my mom, she was very supportive. She's supportive in anything that I do. But on my father's side, he, you know, my father is an entrepreneur. Shout out to him, moreevents.com. He's a DJ. He got a little business with his partner. So if you need a DJ company, call them. DJ Rolo. Anyways, so, you know, he is currently an entrepreneur. And, you know, he's also has a full-time job. So I look up to him because he's doing exactly what I'm doing. I'm literally following in his footsteps. And then my grandfather also owned a business. He was a like a machinist. So I feel like my father, you know, he gave me some tough love. He's like, you know, what happens if this happens and blah, blah, blah. But he ended up giving me really good advice because originally I wanted to open up a store. But he's like, well, you got to pay rent, you got to pay employees, you got to do this, you got to that. And he knows it. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll start, you know, start on like online first and then just have the clothes in my house. And then it ended up working out perfect because the pandemic happened and I probably would have never even been successful in my business because online is probably the best way to go now. Even though I personally like going in store, trying on clothes, I feel like this generation's, you know, it's more easier to buy online. It's just one click away and boom, you get your outfit. And it's more variety and more, you know, a lot more businesses. But I felt like, you know, my family was supportive. And the fact that my dad was an entrepreneur, he was able to give me advice. Even though he's in the like entertainment industry and I sell clothes, it's different. But yeah, you know, when it comes to taxes and stuff, he was able to help me out.
So do you think there was any kind of like change because it was more of a creative field? Because actually, well, no, they're both creative. Because yeah, if he's DJing music and fashion designing, is still both around there.
I feel like it's because he's a guy and he doesn't really know about clothes. But he was able to give me like, you know, a little advice to like, oh, use your credit card for this, put your cable bill on this, because technically use your internet for your business kind of thing. So little stuff like that. He was able to teach me.
All right, cool. Evelyn?
Okay, well, in my case, I did not feel supported. I mean, I was 26 when I first like, had, well, honestly, since I could apply makeup, which was when I was 18, once we graduated, it was a free-for-all for me and my two sisters. We could get piercings, get our nails done, do our makeup. So at first, that's when I first found like the passion for it, because I wasn't only applying makeup on myself, but on my other two sisters before we would go out. And then, you know, word of mouth, like, they would just tell the cousins would tell their friends. But then when it will go back into me discussing me wanting to do makeup with my parents, it would be more of like, that's a hobby. You don't want to be in the salon industry. There's a lot of, anywhere you go, there's going to be something that you're not going to like, but more so Dominican salon. They don't really have the best rep as far as being an employer. So, that really stuck to me and kind of pushed me back from actually pursuing it. But then once Instagram came about and once I noticed that I have a thing, because now it wasn't just makeup within the household, it was now within friends and coworkers, I was like, you know what? I have something here. This is, I'm talented. I should branch off and start to like, you know, make my business cards and let people know, like, you know, I'm here to service you. So, but every time it would come back to speaking about it at home, it was not easy for me. My two sisters went to school, got degrees, you know, very much living the corporate life. And I'm the youngest of the three, and it was very hard for me to like shake them out of like corporate world is not what's gonna fulfill me and my purpose in life. It's not my calling. So 26 came and I was just like, let's just do it. And then like 2 years ago, I feel like was when it really started branching off, because, you know, I just feel like I was pushing myself more and just like blocking out the outside noise and just going full on for what I wanted. And now I can say more than ever is now, like, I feel like I had a connection with Patty a lot, like during the last panel, because I feel like now more than ever, I'm really having that moment of reflecting and being like, damn, Ev, like, you know, you have done a lot with this. And now when I speak to my mom about it, she's like, she takes me seriously. Like, she's like, oh my God, you know, like, I heard you did my girlfriend's wedding the other day, like, you know, without me really having to tell her, like, oh, mom, I'm clocking in at 4 a.m. in the morning to do a wedding, you know? Like, I just feel like by being, I guess, the misfit in the family, I did change their perspective on, like, you can be a business owner and eventually have a storefront, a one-stop shop where everybody, that's my plan, to have a one-stop shop where everyone could just go get glanced, get dressed and leave, like, you know? But at first it was very difficult for me in my household to get that, you know, that shift happening for myself.
I just want to say, like, I respect Evelyn for pursuing her dreams and leaving, like, you know, a cushy job, you know, that typically people would be like, no, you know, this is a safe way to do it, stay at my job. But no, she's following her heart, following her passion, and now she's doing makeup full time and gorgeous. These girls are gorgeous. Doing such a great job. I'm so proud of you.
You had Mark compliment you, Evelyn. That's well, how you know.
Exactly. That photo is amazing. Yeah. But I'm going to chime in here because I think there's some similarities. You know, you take the good, you take the bad. That's how life works. You know, when, what do you do? Well, I'd like to work in the arts. Oh, well, that's a good hobby, but what do you really want to do? You know, that banking in data communications aspect of banking in the 80s. And, you know, at 30 some years ago, I just said, that's it. I'm working in the arts and that's all there is to it. And you cut your earnings in half, but it's, you know, little by little, you get where you're supposed to go. And I'm a firm believer in that. And if it were easy, everybody would do it, you know, and sometimes you just have to make your own path in it. But what encourages me, you know, working in Huntington, and I think this will, you know, sort of flip-flop in with what Jacob was saying, that Long Island is so almost fractured. You know, the town of Huntington, I think, has 10 school districts, and Long Island has, 124, 126 school districts. Some of the districts and, you know, Huntington is very fortunate. Their art departments are fantastic. Visual arts, performing arts. These kids are getting some really great education and, you know, being shown this is possible, that's possible. And I'm hoping that support continues, you know, because being an artist in our society is not the easiest job to do. Let's just put it that way. And I get that. And it's can be discouraging. I think artists hear no more than they hear any other word. No, you can't do that. No, well, we were going to, but we're not. You know, and to make it as an artist in our country is a huge deal, because some of you were you know, alluding to it, you know, well, take your business classes and go, you know, and go do that and make your money. And then you can always do that art thing. And, you know, some people just have to do that art thing because that's what they do. And the good thing about it is there are creative solutions to these things. You know, the creative mind can take you in a whole different way that might not be taught in an MBA program. You know, we think differently as artists, and there's a real value to that. You know, I've been working in the arts for 30, 35 years now. And, you know, so it's possible. Things change. Things are going to get better. I had to almost empathize with you, Jacob. I waited on more tables than I ever cared to wait on. And You know, it was like that, you know, you realize maybe I'm grown up because I never have to wait on another table again in my life. Well, if I had to do it tomorrow, maybe I could. I don't know if the knees are still up to it, but it's just one of those things, you know, you go through this, life changes and life morphs and life gets pretty darn good sometimes, but you wind up in places. Winding up as the head of an arts council is not what I thought I was going to do, but it's what I was supposed to do, mm-hmm. You know? And I think, you know, that's there's a lot of creativity here and I hear it. And I, you know, it's very encouraging to me. Like, you know, we alluded to, I will be retiring. I have no qualms about it. There are people out there ready to take over and poised. You know, I've had my time, now it's somebody else's. The arts are in fantastic shape. They're in good hands. And you guys are the ones that are going to bring us into new creative territories that we never even thought of before. And I think that's a major thing.
I think that's why I brought everyone here too. It's like, you know, like I said, not everybody's directly an artist, but you guys are all creatives in your own ways. Exactly. And I think that's what's changing also in the art scene. It's like we're finding new forms of art and it's not just traditional art. And I think that's very important. And we'll let you, you know, I know we don't have much time, but Jacob, if you want to chime in on the last on that question that we just had, you know, you pursuing a journalist career, because writing is also, you could probably, like, I call myself the black sheep of the family as well, just like everyone said. So like, I don't know what it feels like to be, yeah, a writer, I guess. And how do you feel, like, what's your support system?
Well, I'm very fortunate that my family kind of pushed me and encouraged me to pursue my dreams and goals with being a journalist. I mean, it's the word journalist kind of like has changed just throughout. Like, I'm not going to give you like a whole history on what journalism is, but like, I feel like there's a, especially nowadays, people don't trust the word journalism or journalist. So to be pursuing a career that has a lot of eyes on you and that's not always a good thing, was very fearful. And my parents kind of, you know, pushed me towards that goal. And they said, you know what, you're passionate. You love making documentaries or videography. You love writing poetry. You love, you know, I was very creative in that sense. So I figured journalism, and I love covering stories and hearing people's stories and putting their stories into whether it be a video format or a writing format, which would be an article. I love doing that. And I'm very passionate about hearing people and even people. I think one of my biggest inspirations is my culture. You know, I want to get the voices out from the people that aren't able to get their voices heard and give them a platform to, you know, speak. And I think that's why I'm proud to be Hispanic, and I'm happy to be giving this, this opportunity with, you know, being able to pursue my dream, because not a lot of people have that opportunity to go to school or to do the things that they want to do or that they love doing. So, yeah, in that way, I'm happy that I'm able to do that.
Cool. So we're running out of time.
This is the bad part about my job.
So we're just going to do this one real quick, because this is my classic line that Kieran always picks on me because he says it's become a staple of my panel talks. We're just going to name our favorite food because I have to do this. Mark, you could chime in on this one. We'll make it quick. But the twist of it, you cannot name a food that comes from your country. Because I know that if I said it in the questions, you guys would just pick, you had it ready to go. But now you have to give me something that's not coming from your country. So Mark, when it's your turn, I no Italian dishes on this end. So who wants to go first? And we'll make it quick because then we're going to wrap up. But
I don't know. I feel like this dish is all type of country. I always beat whoever. Oh, my bad. But I feel like this dish, every country has it. So I'm not, except mine. Mine is boring, but they have a delicious food. But it's el desayuno típico. So it has like eggs, it has rice, it has beans, it has fried plantain, It has a piece of pork. So it has everything and avocado, and it has a little piece of bread there.
All right, Evelyn.
arepa de choclo con queso. So it's like corn cake with melted cheese on top. It's from Colombia. And shout out to George for putting me on, because amazingness.
Jacob.
I would say halal. Halal food. It's amazing.
Wow. That was an interesting, you're the first one. I don't know if I'll ever get you again, because yeah, definitely you're a Gen Z man for sure. Yeah.
That's right. I was gonna say ceviche, but I'm gonna say like sushi. That's like my new favorite thing now. Sushi.
Right? Have you tried Mama Sushi?
No.
That's Mama Sushi. It's a Latin take on sushi, and I'm telling you, me being plant-based, they even got options for me, and it's fire. Aww. They put maduros in the sushi. I don't know.
What? Like, okay, yeah. I'm about to go there.
You guys gotta go for sure. It's fire. And now, last but not least, Mark, what are we getting?
This is very difficult, because having to pick one food is like, you know, pick your favorite pet or your favorite child or something. You're not supposed to do that, but I'll go a little broader with this. When I'm out at a restaurant, a non-Italian restaurant, I love duck. Duck was not something I grew up eating as a child. Not everybody likes it. And I don't cook it, because I'd be the only one eating it. So, and there's so many good variations on duck.
That I actually had that for my wedding, one of the dishes.
Oh, and you didn't invite me. Next time.
Right. It was really good.
Before I went plant-based, I've been fortunate enough. I tried peking duck in Beijing. And yeah, it was good. It's duck is cool. I mean, I don't eat meat anymore, but yeah, it was good.
I eat enough for the both of us. Don't you worry. Don't
you worry. I guess this is a time where we wrap up, guys. I want to say,
well,
Maya, and I want to say thank you.
Thank everybody. Yeah. You know, especially, you know, what I
want to take like a group picture.
I don't think you can.
We can get it.
Screenshot.
But I want to thank you all for joining us and coming into, you know, Huntington Arts Council. As I before we went live, I did say, please come to see us. You know, now that, you know, Hispanic Heritage Month, Latinx Month, I want you to be part of our community. You're very welcomed, and we'd be happy to have you. And, you know, stay close to us. I would like to say this, maybe in 5 years, we should meet again, because I think we're going to be in places we didn't dream we were going to be in. You know, the business is going to do this. So, you know, like life has.
Mark is going to be in a secluded island.
That's what I would say. Mark is
my Wi-Fi. World.
Yeah, I wouldn't last 10 minutes. No. Yeah. But thank you all for joining us this evening. It's been marvelous. Jose, for putting this together. Allison, Jacob, Evelyn, Desiree. I've enjoyed this very much. I hate having to be the ogre that says the clock on the wall says we have to stop, but the clock on the wall says we have to stop.